You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And good morning. It is 8:06. Nice to have you back here up north on this Thursday, August 28th. Parker Olson producing down in Madison Studio A2. Coming up, we'll be talking to Chad Holmes from 98.9 WXCO in Wausau. We'll be talking to Sean O'Malley about your money in the markets. Joe Zabecki will talk to us a bit about this week's Wisconsin political news. But before all that, let's talk to meteorologist Brittany Merlot about what is just a gorgeous morning. It's shaping up to be so nice. The fog has lifted. The hay field is empty again. I know I've talked about this before, but the machinery that you find on these farms nowadays, doing a hay field, you take like a whole day. You'd need a big old hay wagon, like six teenagers helping throw bales. And the equipment here that just, I mean, moves so fast and cuts such a wide swath and takes that field off in just lickety split. And it's just impressive. You know, that's, and they got their fourth crop off, which is good. This has been a good year for all of our farmers so far. Not all of them. Some of them got that hail damage a couple of weeks back, but they've got a nice stretch of weather right now going for them.
I'll take the good news. I love it. And I'm hoping that everyone else is thinking this is good news as we go into this weekend as well, because the cold front is moving through the state today. A high pressure system takes over and it's going to hold a big shield right there on the western edge of the state, keeping all of the rain this weekend off into places like Minnesota and Iowa. So it is good news. Dry weather continues and we're looking at some comfortable temperatures staying in place too. So still some spots of dense fog this morning. That'll be gone by 9 o'clock. We are looking at temperatures this morning, 55 to about 65 degrees right now. By this afternoon, we will warm things up to the mid 70s all across the state. More and more sunshine as the day wears on, as this front passes through, giving us nice clear skies. And then the winds, they're calmer for us inland. But off by the big lakes, Great Lakes, you're still seeing some stronger winds, big waves, rip currents, beach hazard statement, pretty much from Sheboygan to Kenosha and also into Douglas County off of Lake Superior. So be careful if you're headed into the water early. And we're also tonight, Northeast Wisconsin, far Northwoods, Ashland, Iron County, UP. You might need to bring in some sensitive plants or cover up anything of that garden, because we are looking at temperatures dropping cold tonight, down to the low to mid 30s. A frost advisory is out for overnight and early tomorrow morning. We are looking at a cooler day ahead tomorrow, mostly sunny, but a lot of us sitting in the mid 60s. Only a few 70s tomorrow far in the state, west and south. Otherwise, we're going to have to wait till Saturday. All of us climb to the low 70s statewide. Sunday, warmer, mid 70s for most. And then Monday for Labor Day, a little bit more muggy and still mild, upper 70s, low 80s. Out there and dry the entire weekend.
I don't get this whole notion of the sensitive plants. I mean, I feel like we could toughen them up, you know. Maybe we should stop coddling them.
Rub some dirt on it. You're fine.
Rub some dirt on, literally, your plants. We should just be able to rub some dirt on it and they'll be okay. But we're getting there. Do you have anything good and fun planned for your Labor Day weekend?
I do. I'm actually headed to the Northwoods, so I'll be battling the cold up there tonight and doing some kayaking, camping, hiking, waterfall searching, all of that good stuff.
Wow. Sounds like fun. Well, enjoy the long weekend. We'll talk to you on Tuesday.
Thanks. You too,
all right.
Guys.
Thanks, Brittany. All right. Have a wonderful day and a wonderful weekend. Reminder, you can sign up for our daily newsletter at Up North News. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com. That includes our Sunday morning newsletter that I put together and our question of the week as well. And remember, you can also pod this program. If you can't catch us live or if you want to listen back to past episodes, head over to Spotify and look up Mornings with Pat Kreitlow and follow us there. You can do the same at Apple and learn more over at civicmedia.us. Chad Holmes joins us now from 98.9 WXCO. Last time we talked, it was about week one of high school football being in the books. Tonight, college football gets underway with the Badgers taking on Miami of Ohio. And then for a holiday weekend, do you have like the full slate of high school football games, or do they take off for the Labor Day break?
No. And you mentioned first Wisconsin Badgers. I have a controversial take when it comes to college football. I pretend that there's no Badger game if they don't play on Saturday, because I have
that's
a high
right.
school
yes,
football
you've told
game
me
tonight.
That. Yes. Yep. Yes.
it's especially for Friday nights. I give them a little bit of leeway on a Thursday night. I think that's a little different. But forever, Friday night has been high school football night. Right. And now the last few years, TV networks and these major conferences who think that the world rotates around the Big Ten Conference or the Southeastern Conference decided that they have to do games on Friday night. And the Badgers have cashed in on that as well, and that makes me upset. So I ignore the Badgers when they don't play on Saturdays, but maybe I'll take a peek. But I think people would be better served by making sure that since the Badgers don't kick off until 8 o'clock, which is, again, made for television, but they can tune into my game and then listen to it for the first half and then see how things are going, and then go from there. And there'll be still plenty of time because those college football games never end. It probably won't end until about 11:45 tonight anyway. So I guess there's room for both. But I'm one of those that stands on my little lonely island when it comes to pushing back against the big money of the Big Ten Conference.
Well, I guess good luck with that, because I called it up. And there's a very healthy-looking Friday night football schedule. Of course, it's got to be TV, and it's because of Fox. Fox runs some Friday night football games on the main network and sometimes on FS1. And, of course, that's all getting started this Friday night with Auburn at Baylor. So, I mean, they aren't the biggest names, but, you know, they'll get some in there. Like Iowa plays Rutgers sometime in September, so that's a Big Ten. You got Nebraska at Minnesota on October 17th. There's Northwestern. There's Minnesota. Yeah, that's a depressing amount of Big Ten teams that still want to play on Friday nights.
I will give Ohio State credit. I will give Michigan credit. They have said, no, we're not doing it. We're not doing it at home, at least. I think they're willing to go on the road, but they're not going to do it on a Friday night at home. So they've said no to that. But and I can, I guess, understand in a sense that some of the other schools, say Northwestern or others, that may not get the same level of national exposure, and it's good for the program to have high school athletes who may consider going there have the opportunity. But I am somebody that is, as I've gotten older, I mean, I used to know everything about the Packers and the NFL and the college ranks. Mm-hmm. I have put my energy, it's not just because I work it, it's because I actually like it, into the high school games, and I prefer to be out on in this case, a Thursday night, and then tomorrow night on a Friday night doing high school football.
Yeah. And you know, plenty of people still want to enjoy that as well. Some either in the stands or like Alicia, she says here on YouTube, I listen to the Kimberly games from my backyard.
I've done a game at Kimberly a number of years back, and it's really an experience. They do it really big. I mean, it's just a real fun, festive atmosphere around the field before the game. When people come in, they pack the house. They've had so much success over the years. It's become such a major event over there. And I tell you, if you don't get there early, you're going to have a hard time getting there on time. And I've learned that lesson, and it was a real fun experience to go over there and do a game.
Well, I mean, they're no Kaukauna, but I mean, it's good.
I love Kaukauna too,
I'm saying that because Dr. Lyerly's not here, and she'd totally be going after Alicia for this, the whole Kimberly Kaukauna rivalry. So, Dr. Lyerly, if you're listening, I'm there. I'm representing you. So
I love the Kaukauna horse. They had, I don't know if they still do it this way because I haven't been over there, because actually West used to be in the same football conference for a number of years. That's changed, but they would have, and I think they probably still do it. They have somebody on a horse, and it's the Galloping Ghosts. and they have the horse come in there with the football. They hand the football over to the referee for the opening kickoff, and it's a real cool thing seeing that horse run on the field before the game starts. So again, that's the stuff about high school athletics that is so wonderful. You have that atmosphere, you have that sense of community. It is the best deal in town. I mean, what is it? I think $5 to get in, and and the burgers are always great, and they're not stiffing you for $20 to park and then everything else. So come out. If I'm my goal here today is, if you're out there listening and you're in a community, and I think most of our communities have high schools that have a football team, at some point this season, go out and see a game just to experience it. You'll probably see some of your neighbors and support the kids in the neighborhood, and get out there and don't spend all your time worrying about who the third string tackle is for the Green Bay Packers.
That's a good way to put it. Yes. Alicia writes, you should come to a Kimberly Kakana game. It's awesome. She, of course, says Kimberly is better, which is fine. Alicia writes in, I don't think they still do the horse because people would say they – look like a
I don't know about that. I'm gonna have to research that.
We're gonna research that,
and that's some trash talk from a Kimberly fan against their neighbors.
Yes, that could very well be. but it is. It's just a great sense of community that we don't get nearly enough of, where people are getting to talk to their neighbors and just enjoy the game, especially if you get the good weather. I mean, there are Friday nights, as you know. You've done high school football in every kind of weather.
Well, you've been fortunate. Last week was great, both on Thursday and Friday nights. Tonight, I think, I got to admit, I have to double check it, but from what I'd heard, it's supposed to be pretty nice. And then have another game tomorrow night. And of course, it's always a wonder. I always like this weekend. It's we're into football, then we have the long holiday weekend.
Yes.
And something I look forward to on Labor Day weekend. I've done it for now. This will be like the 12th year that I've been fortunate enough to be asked to do the announcing for the Wausau Labor Day Parade. Got a great relationship with the Labor Council here in North Central Wisconsin, and they do such a wonderful job. It's a wonderful, again, and I think for folks out there throughout the state of Wisconsin, so many communities have these Labor Day parades, and you line up on the road. And in the case here in Wausau, we have the high school marching bands, we have floats, we have even a few politicians show up as well.
I've marched in that parade, and that's one of the longer ones. That was 13 years ago. Maybe the route has changed, but
they're changing the route this year, so I'm kind of curious to see how it works out.
Okay, yeah, there are some routes. I mean, my first parade ever was in Boyd, Stanley Boyd, on 29, four blocks. It was it because that's the town, but it was That was a good sized parade to be in compared to some of these like up the road here in Jim Falls. It's a couple of miles because there's like this break, and then there's more of the town, and then there's the park where the parade ends. And so there's this like half a mile break where you basically all get in your cars and you go down the route a little ways, and then you start walking again. Otherwise, it's going to take forever. So not every community lends itself to a nice short, compact parade.
Hey, we all need our steps, right? Come on.
Yeah, we're all going to get it one way or the other. Chad Holmes, follow him for big high school sports show and all the games over at 98.9 WXCO and through the Civic Media app. Thanks, Chad. Have a great holiday weekend.
Thank you. You too, Pat.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk to Sean O'Malley about your money and the markets. And then later we will talk to Joe Sopecki before we tie a bow on things and head into the long holiday weekend. From the heart of America's Up North, live from Lake Wissota, thanks for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. Powered by Up North News, I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
The Chicago Cubs done got killed yesterday by the San Francisco Giants 12-3. The Brewers' magic number is 23, and they wrap up their four-game series with the Arizona Diamondbacks this afternoon at American Family Field. Coverage begins at 12:35 on select stations. And then later, across other stations on the Civic Media Radio Network, you can hear the Badger football team kick off their season against Miami of Ohio. The game begins at 8, but you can listen to the pregame starting at 6 o'clock this evening on Civic Media stations in Richland Center, Wisconsin Rapids, Ripon, and Amory. Sean O'Malley joins us now from up in Bayfield to talk about your money and the markets. We've got a lot to cover today, and we're going to start with credit delinquencies on the rise and what exactly is happening with consumer credit. I would imagine in part because of the ongoing uncertainty and other economic factors. But Sean, good morning. How are you? Happy early Labor Day weekend.
Thank you, Pat. Yes, happy early Labor Day weekend. Unfortunately, yeah, the news for consumers continues to be less than stellar. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing is deterioration really across the credit spectrum. So there were some notable announcements that came out in the last week. One is that what are called the super prime borrowers, those people with a credit rating between 780 and 850, they have seen a 109% year-over-year increase in 90-plus day delinquencies. Now, 90-plus day delinquencies are important because that's when you're increasingly likely to move towards charge-off. So we're basically seeing that even the most creditworthy of borrowers on their credit cards are starting to go delinquent by over 90 days, increasing the likelihood that they will eventually become a charge-off, which means credit losses may be going up. But it's not just the super prime. It's also the prime, the lenders between with credit scores between 720 and 780. They are also going up, not as much as the super primes there, but they're seeing a 47% year-over-year increase in 90-plus day delinquencies. So a lot of softening there. We're also seeing increases in auto loan delinquencies, increases in mortgage delinquencies. And a lot of this is due to the fact that, you know, we are seeing some slowdowns in economic activity and possible, you know, increases. Inflation is steadily rising out there. And I think if you talk to any, you know, Mr. and Mrs. America out there, they're going to tell you that they have less money in their pocket right now than they used to.
Well, they do, and in part as well, because you've got these, I guess properly describe them as Trump tariff taxes, right?
Correct. Yeah. So it's all the, you know, the Trump tariff taxes are consumption taxes. We're talking about consumers. We are a consumption-based economy. That's another reason why we're looking at some of the economic activity slowing down. Forecasts are now for GDP to go down nearly a full percent in 2025 due to these Trump tariff taxes. So it's having basically the opposite effect of what you really want in the economy. You want, you know, prices to be steady, not increasing. You want employment to be fairly full. You want consumers to be confident. But the problem is you're seeing a slowdown in economic activity, which is also reflected in the decline in durable goods orders. Now, this really impacts and is reflective of the manufacturing sector, most primarily. And for July, durable good orders were down 2.8%. So that's a pretty significant decline. What we're seeing is that uncertainty after the new round of tariffs, you know, after the taco went in, we got the new round of tariffs, and now we're starting to see it have real bite, real impact. And it is not good.
No, it is not. We're talking to Sean O'Malley about your money and the markets here. And so that consumer confidence level that's out there, I mean, yeah. Again, that is irrespective of partisan bent. Correct. Do you see that as a clean indicator of where people feel, no matter what their political leanings?
Yes. And since we now have to be a little bit suspect of any data coming out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics, because Trump has politicized that, thank heavens we have something like consumer confidence, where we know that it's, you know, reasonably accurate and independent. But we did see an August decline of 1.3 points. So again, it's staying below that 100, which means that, you know, consumers do not have the same confidence that they would normally have. We are, you know, consumer confidence is on the decline. And this, in this case, they cited largely concerns about the labor market, but I've also seen concerns about inflation. So we're really, you know, keeping with that stagflation light theme of, you know, fewer jobs, higher prices.
What about you know, certain intangibles and how the markets address those? I'm noticing that you have a t-shirt that says Free DC, all about the DC occupation and what's happening in Los Angeles as well. And you can't necessarily quantify that, but it does have, it does add some level of uncertainty to the economy, I would think, when you have military troops on the streets of American cities.
Yes. Well, I'm a free markets guy, and part of free markets is freedom. And yeah, we need to have people being allowed to travel freely, feeling that they can go out and do, you know, what they normally do, you know, make purchases, go up to restaurants, that sort of thing. Now, if you have armed troops on the streets, people probably get to travel freely.
Exactly. We're talking to Sean O'Malley. We're talking to Sean O'Malley here about your money in the markets. He's talking to us from Bayfield. We got a little blip in the connection there, but we'll take care of that over the commercial break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Sean a bit more about the president's effort to fire a governor on the Federal Reserve Board, whether he has the legal authority to do so. And speaking of being a free markets guy, I'm betting he has some opinions on Trump making the government take a 10% share of Intel. Socialism, anybody? And then Joseph Pecky, right on his heels on this Thursday morning here on These Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News across the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere. Back in a bit. Remember, if you want to catch more of what we're doing at Up North News, sign up for our newsletters. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com and click subscribe up there in the top banner. We're talking to Sean O'Malley about your money in the markets, and then Joseph Pecky to follow just moments away. But Sean, I could not wait to ask you about President Trump's efforts to fire Lisa Cook, a member of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors, and whether she serves purely at the pleasure of the president. And whatever that status, what does it mean that Donald Trump is working so hard to fire members of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors?
It's really interesting that he seems hyper-focused on putting pressure on, first on, you know, Jerome Powell, the man he put in as chairman of the Federal Reserve. And now I guess he's decided that the next best thing is to try to fire Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook, the first and only African-American woman ever to have been a governor of the Federal Reserve in their 100 plus year history. But the problem is he does not have the legal authority to do so. Federal Reserve was created to be an independent entity, separate and uninfluenced by politics. So what has happened is that Lisa Cook is now suing Donald Trump for his efforts to try to illegally fire her.
And that could lead to, one thing that I read, and maybe I'm just overly speculative here, but there would then be, if she sues, there would be a discovery process by which we might find out to what degree Trump and some other people on his team were digging into people's personal mortgage applications and things like that, essentially looking to, you know, weaponize ways to get political retribution on some of their foes. So this thing might have some legs to it.
It might. They're certainly trying to spin the narrative, but the counter narrative is, let's not forget that Donald Trump has gone out and bought over $100 million in bonds. And remember that bond prices go up when interest rates go down. So he has a very vested interest in making interest rates go down.
That is a conflict of interest. It's got to be almost anything in presidential history. I've got
to think. Yeah, well, but compare it to what he's doing open corruption all the time. He's made $4 billion from his cryptocurrency since the election. And that basically allows him to accept bribes and influence, you know, peddle influence readily. And since he has removed the restriction on contributions, basically, to political officials back in February through an executive order, it means nobody's tracking this, nobody's reporting on it. And since it's crypto, it's anonymous. So you don't know. We don't know. We have transparency, but of course he does. He knows who's giving him money.
I mean, if you credit him with discovering anything, it's discovering that if you do all your criming right in the open, people think that it's normal and okay. It's really something. Now, and then finally, from, again, a free market guy, probably has some opinions on Trump's government demanding a 10% stake in Intel, a level of, you know, what other people would define as socialism that seems a little out of place for a Republican president.
Yeah, it was obviously the first question to ask of a Republican president, saying, well, okay, so are we going state-owned entities now that you've taken up a 10% ownership stake in Intel Corporation? It's very bizarre. I mean, you hear it so often that you almost become numb to it, but we are continually going deeper and deeper into uncharted waters with respect to grift, graft, and corruption with this president. So it's surprising every time it happens, but there's so much of it, it's hard to keep track of it all.
God, no kidding. Sean O'Malley, about your money in the markets, thank you very much. Hope you get some sailing time in. Have a wonderful Labor Day weekend.
Thanks, Pat. You too. Take care.
All right. We'll talk to you later. All right. Let's check in now with Joe Zepecki and talk a bit about some of the other headlines that are out there. But first off, I'm sure you've got a little football to take care of before you start your weekend, right?
Yes. We've got JV and varsity football the next two evenings. Varsity started the season last week with a nice win over the Milwaukee Academy of Science. So, so far, so good.
Okay. So let's head into things here first with the visit to La Crosse today by the vice president, J.D. Vance. Yes.
Okay. Can we stay on Intel for a second?
Absolutely. And let me lead into it by saying that the quote of the week comes from President Donald Trump, asked about something, and his quote was, "I have the right to do anything. I'm president of the United States."
And that's what I wanted to press on, because Sean's points were all very well taken. There is no mechanism in law for this. Like right now, you and I, the American taxpayers, are apparently investors in Intel, but we have no statute that defines what that relationship is like. There is no oversight from Congress. You know, we've had historic Congresses called things like the Do Nothing Congress of 1947 and 1948. What the hell do we call this Congress? It's like Congress doesn't exist anymore, that Republicans, including Freedom House members, very conservative members of Congress from Wisconsin, people like Tom Tiffany, who I thought remained somewhere amidst this MAGA insanity, had a shred of like true conservatism, who believed in the Constitution and checks and balances, and that they were part of a co-equal branch of government. Congress has done nothing to call on the carpet the cabinet officials who have apparently negotiated this deal, the president and his advisors who are just saying, oh yeah, we own this now. Mm-hmm. What are we doing? Like, this is actually insane that the Congress has just abdicated any of its responsibilities here.
Well, it's why yesterday I explained why I have started using the word regime, which I know sounds, you know, to some people might sound flippant or an example of Trump derangement syndrome or something, but it's a regime, not an administration. When you have a Congress whose, I love this word, obsequiousness has risen to the point where they literally do nothing that isn't on the command of the president, and more than half of your Supreme Court that, again, is politicized to the point where it's no longer an administration subject to checks and balances. It is now a regime across three branches of government. And even if slash when it is overthrown by the voters at some point, the harms that have been done are going to, it's no longer a matter of, wow, can we clean this up in the first 4 years after Trump is gone? No, it's going to be, we're not going to clean some of this stuff up for a generation after Trump is gone.
Or more. I'm going to read you something that David Frum wrote this week, and then you tell me what words we should use to describe this. This is David Frum, quote, military patrols in U.S. cities, police raids on homes of government critics, mass detentions without due process, government taking control of private companies, supply shortages and price increases due to government attacks on free commercial exchange, the government imposing huge fines on media corporations for First Amendment protected speech that displeased the president, enormous tax increases imposed on Americans without any vote by Congress, violent convicted criminals released onto the streets because they directed their violence against persons the president targeted as his personal enemies. If we saw that in another country, what would we call it?
A banana republic or something along those lines. Yeah.
This is where we are. This is the legacy of the first August of Donald Trump's second term. Mm-hmm. August is where administrations get into trouble historically, whether that's, you know, the Afghanistan withdrawal for Biden, whether it's the Obamacare town halls for Obama. I think Katrina might have been in August. And the legacy of this August is that I really think in a lot of respects, America has fallen. America is no longer the country that it used to be. Whether you want to say it's authoritarian or tyrannical or fascist, none of what I just read that David Frum so helpfully laid out bears any resemblance to America and to American ideals and values and precedents and what was laid out by the founders.
Well, I'll come back to something I said earlier this morning, that it was an August day in 1974 that Richard Nixon knew to at least have the honor and the decency to resign for the things that he did that were so antithetical to American values and norms. And Donald Trump and others have simply, you know, what they learned from that was be defiant to the end, deny everything, lie about it, and, you know, basically dare the people to rise up against you because you control, you know, the people with the guns. And it means we're no longer the nation of laws and norms that we wanted to think that we were.
We are something else now. And David Frum's list didn't include literally rolling out the red carpet and clapping for the butcher of Bucha, Vladimir Putin, who has started the largest land war in Europe. And Donald Trump is just going to play patty cake with him. And since that summit, which was also about nothing other than Donald Trump posing for pictures, Russian attacks on Ukraine have ramped up. They are now reports that a American manufacturing facility was hit in Ukraine. European diplomatic posts have been hit overnight. We are in a very, very dangerous place. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but we've got to understand and speak plainly about this. None of what is happening is American in any sense of the word.
No, not at all. And one final note before we leave the intel matter of the takeover, because I can hear some people going, well, how is that different than the auto industry bailout? You know, and the government was, you know, part of that as well. Those were companies that were about to literally go out of business. An entire sector of the economy would have gone under. And that government infusion of cash, while it provided some ownership, was also something that was later withdrawn when the emergency was over. Intel was not on the verge of bankruptcy by any stretch of the imagination. This was mostly a matter of convenience for the Trump
industry. And those auto industry loans from the government were paid back ahead of schedule.
Right. Exactly. Joe Specky is with us here, helping us cover some news as we wrap up the week here. And I've got only a little bit over a minute, but I don't think we need much more than a minute to come back to the question about J.D. Vance and his visit to La Crosse today and whether there's going to be any lasting significance from it.
No, I look forward to the vice president trying to defend 43,700 Wisconsinites who will lose food assistance benefits. And the reason so many Wisconsinites will lose that assistance is because the state has done such a good job at keeping the error rate low. States with an error rate higher than 6%, they don't have to throw people off. I mean, that's not good government. That's not efficient. I don't get it. We're going to see more than 60,000 people lose Medicaid. I'm not sure there is a defense for that. And that's why J.D. Vance will be lying about it later today.
Well, and he'll do what he does best, along with Congressman Derek Van Orden, is they'll scoff, they'll be snark, they'll be sarcasm. They will say the other side is lying. And basically, the fact-checking that will come in its wake will not be kind. I mean, yep. you can have all the bluster and performative, theater that you want on that stage in La Crosse later today. But those numbers, those facts, those are sometimes stubborn things that get in the way. We are talking to Joe Zepecki. We're going to have some final news and notes coming up from Lake Wissota in just a little bit. First, of course, a reminder that we've got sports. Tonight, the Badger football team kicks off the season against Miami of Ohio. Coverage begins at 6 o'clock on some stations across the Civic Media Radio Network. And the Brewers have a day game today against Arizona. That pregame begins at 12:35 on some of the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
On the text line from Jim in Brookfield, the interview with Kate Felton about cuts to SNAP and healthcare was very well done. She made many excellent points, including the fact that children will be the majority of the people impacted. Do Vance and Van Orden even know that kids don't have any bootstraps? I appreciate that, Jim. If you want to read Kate Felton's piece, Medicaid and SNAP helped my family. Derek Van Orden's vote to cut these programs will be harmful. Head over to Dan Schaefer's site, therecombobulationarea.news. And read that column there by Kate Felton. Joe Zepecki continues with us now, again, talking about the costs of the Trump mega bill, which the governor's office put out a very detailed listing of the actual costs of the mega bill, and that over future budgets down the road, Wisconsin taxpayers are facing $284 million in higher costs to implement this, including $70 million in new funding requirements just to do some of the red tape that Trump is adding to Medicaid and SNAP and things like that. Joe, for a party that loves to talk about getting rid of red tape, they sure know how to lay on the red tape thick when they want to.
Yeah, because they don't want people to have access to healthcare or food assistance. And let's talk about the other harm that cut to food assistance does, which is impacts the people who grow the food that falls under those programs. Mm-hmm. So the fact that every Republican member of Congress from Wisconsin voted for this bill, which is a disaster for working people, and has no compunction whatsoever about saying, you know what, why don't we'll delay some of the implementation so that it's after we have to run for re-election the next time, gives away the game. They don't actually want to defend this. They're afraid of the voters, and they should be, because there is a cause for hope, which is that the American people are seeing what is happening in Washington, D.C., and they do not like it. Trump's approval rate is plummeting. Democrats flipped a conservative district in the state Senate this week. That's a district that Trump won by at least 11 points. A Democratic candidate won it by 11 points this week. That's a low turnout election, but a 22-point swing in a district like that in Iowa means the American people are displeased and are prepared to show that displeasure at the ballot box, and thank goodness for that.
Well, the Trump folks are certainly trying to give the appearance that they're getting things done. Like this tweet from Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy announcing next-gen Acela. These brand new beautiful trains delivered by Amtrak will increase reliability, lower ticket costs, and improve Amtrak profitability. This is all part of President Trump's vision to make travel great again.
Whoops.
Joe
Whoops.
Joe Zepecki and Joe Biden would like to remind you otherwise, that this was not part of Trump's vision. This was part of the Biden administration's bipartisan infrastructure act. Not the last time we'll see this kind of a thing attempted.
No, I mean, it's like word for word from the infrastructure bill that did any Wisconsin Republicans vote for that infrastructure bill?
I don't believe so.
I don't think so either. No. But, you know, Sean Duffy has no problem taking credit for it. This is the bad place, Pat. We have made it. We have made it all the way to the bad place.
Mm-hmm. We have, and we're going to continue. So you're going to hear about these things, meaning you're going to hear us reminding everybody when they show up at these ribbon cuttings that they're the ones that voted against doing the things that they're now trying to take credit for. And it gets me back to this is a point that maybe shouldn't be worth bringing up, but Joe Biden changed that his agenda so that he could call it the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act and the Inflation Reduction Act to try to, again, gain public support and bipartisan support. This was all off of his original agenda called Build Back Better. And I know that I'm looking backwards and you shouldn't be, but I still believe if the Biden team had stuck to their guns and this is the Biden agenda and this is all Build Back Better, that more people would have associated it with the Biden presidency rather than these generic names like Bipartisan Infrastructure Act and Inflation Reduction Act. In the future, for progressives, when they're in places where they get things done, for the love of all things holy, gang, toot your horns a little louder.
Yeah, Democrats have to be better at communications and messaging. We've talked about that ad nauseum. Thank goodness for platforms like the Civic Media Radio Network that allow the left to a place to just get the word out truthfully, factually. And listen, in the Civic Media Network, I am sure my friend Pat Kreitler would be happy to have Republicans come on and try to defend what they've been doing. I would be happy to yield my time every week to any Republican who actually wanted to come on and have a dialogue. But they don't want to do that. They want to go to their safe spaces because they're betas who don't believe in apparently a separation of powers or the constitutional framework that defined the greatness of this country for many, many years.
Well, and if that were the case, people like Derek Van Orden would be holding town halls.
Yeah.
Instead of like last week.
Or Tony Weed would.
They're
all missing in action. It is the invisible Congress.
Every one of them. And, you know, they know how to do these things. They just choose not to. Like Van Orden last weekend kind of sneaking into Eau Claire for a little private business forum and sneaking back out. And clearly it's because you don't want to really have to face the general public. You'll do the hand-picked crowds like in La Crosse today. And that's not exactly transparent nor accountable. Joseph Pecky, thank you. Enjoy the holiday weekend. We'll talk to you a little later.
Go Brewers.
That's right. Indeed, it's going to be a good weekend. Brewers heading to Toronto after this afternoon's game, which, again, you can catch across the Civic Media Radio Network beginning at 12:35 this afternoon. That's going to do it for us tomorrow. We'll have a best of program as I get an early start with some kids and grandkids having a good Labor Day weekend. I sure hope that you get a chance to have a lot of relaxation, a lot of fun, and please do it all very safely. And then after Labor Day, we'll gather right back here Tuesday morning, 6 a.m. here up north. I'm Pat Kreitler, founding editor of Up North News, the Wisconsin home for Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy newsroom building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Have a great Thursday.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.